Well, thank you all for coming this morning. Today we're going to be working on a koan in the Blue Cliff Record, Nonsense Peony, which is number 40. And this describes an interchange between the wonderful Tang Dynasty Zen master Nansan, Nanchuan in Chinese, that was his Chinese name, and a high official in the government as they walked in a garden. But first, a word about listening to Taisho. The word Taisho means the shout, and while most of the time it doesn't really involve shouting, this translation does have a flavor of directness, which is important. That is to say, Taisho is meant not so much to be a talk about the Dharma or the teachings, as a pointer to the truth, an expression of the truth. All of us who do this fall short over and over again. We actually start out knowing that we can't really express it. We can only hint at it. So listening to Taisho is not about figuring out what is being said at all. Even if you could figure it out, that would miss the opportunity. Just listen with an open heart and mind, in a comfortable position so you can be present to listening. If you need to change position, it's quite all right to do so, as long as you move mindfully and quietly so as not to disturb other people or your own attention. Just let the Taisho seep in, and if something hits, right now or in 10 years, that's fine. If not, that's okay too. We never know the effect of what we hear on our body-mind, and sometimes over time there is a subtle understanding which starts to develop outside of our known words and our ideas. So this koan reads, while conversing with Nanchuan, the high official Rico said, "The priest Zhou said, 'Heaven and earth and I are of the same root. All things and I are one.' That's extraordinarily wonderful." Nansen pointed to a flower plant in the front garden and called to the official, saying, "People of the present day," and by this he means Rico, "see this one flower as if they were in a dream." So a high official of the government who's walking in the garden with Nansen repeats this phrase, which he loves, which stirs something in him. "Heaven and earth and I are of the same root. All things and I are one." You know, he's not wrong, but he's not speaking from his own experience. And yet, in a way, he recognizes something, and something in this phrase inspires him. Nansen replies, "People of the present day see this one flower as though they were in a dream. You see this flower as if dreaming. You're not really seeing this flower. You don't see this flower." Prospero, who's the magician philosopher in one of Shakespeare's greatest plays, The Tempest, said, "We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little lives are rounded with a sleep. We spend our lives dreaming, dreaming, and then we sleep." Once when I was a young adolescent, and certainly before I did any spiritual work, I have the memory of being in a bad dream, and in the middle of it, realizing that I could wake up. I told myself to open my eyes, and I found myself awake. I knew I had been dreaming, and now that I was awake. Another time, I told myself, "This is a bad dream, but it is a dream, so you can fly. Just fly away." I remember lifting up in the air and soaring high. Somehow I knew that I could move in the dream state, that it was malleable, that the rules were different, and I suppose at some level that I was making up the rules. I would guess that many of us have had these experiences, and some of us are very adept at moving in the dream state and have actually practiced lucid dreaming. Usually, though, my dreaming is totally unconscious. It's a stream of thoughts and images. I'm totally lost, and when I'm dreaming, I don't know it. It's only when I wake up that I really know that I've been asleep. There is, of course, a whole science around lucid dreaming, with societies and conferences to help you learn how to do it. And it turns out that the main strategy is to cue yourself that you are in a dream state and to be able to control it to some extent, to be lucid, aware, while in the dream state. But it's usually for entertainment, to promote creativity, and very rarely for a spiritual aim. But there is a strong element of manipulation, of maintaining a sense of control, which is the primary aim. This seems to me fundamentally different than the issue of spiritual awakening. But there is one important parallel. This is that learning to manipulate the dream state in lucid dreaming produces more elaborate, sophisticated dreaming experiences, but it doesn't really increase awareness or awakening. In the same way, spiritual awakening, seeing into the true nature of reality, does not really arise out of the manipulation of thoughts, sensations, emotions which we experience, in other words, our stream of consciousness. In fact, much of what can pass for spiritual practice, and this is true in many traditions, not just Zen, actually falls in this realm. It does not actually bring about awakening, even though it can certainly organize and enhance our lives. We cannot manipulate our minds into waking up by trying to control the state of our consciousness. Roshi describes increasing awareness as going from true sleeping and dreaming to an everyday waking dream life of most people, which for the most part we live mechanically, on autopilot, lost in thought and divorced from reality. Then, if we start to practice mindfulness, we become aware of how often we are in a dream state as we constantly come back to our practice, to paying attention in this moment. The last step is to wake up from our dream of separation, this illusion of self and other, and this is what we call an experience of awakening. And what is enlightenment? It's knowing that we are nothing, that we're nothing and that we're everything. Not knowing as an idea, but as our personal, direct experience, experiencing that we're nothing, that we're everything. Knowing for sure. Any of us who have had even a tiny awakening experience, or even several experiences, would have to admit that we don't really stay awake. We come back from dreaming over and over again. But it is possible to truly give up the dream state, or to have the dream state give up on us. When people ask the Buddha who he was, he answered very simply, "I am awake. I am awake." How do you teach someone to wake up? If you come to them as they dream and tell them, "You're asleep," is that helpful? Maybe try to shake them, "Wake up, wake up." Does that help them to wake up? And yet, that's what all teachers do. Shake, shake, shake. How do we stop dreaming? We can't just will it. We can't decide to do it. Although maybe being willing to do it does make it possible. Creates the space for it to happen. We do have to be willing to let go of the dreaming state. And that's actually a giving up, a letting go. If we rest in awareness, then there's room for illumination. Also, somehow, questioning the dream state helps us to wake up. Asking deeply with all our being, "What is this? What am I? What is this life?" The questioning itself starts to bring us out of the dream. Pema Chodron describes our waking consciousness, this moment when we return from being lost in thought, as if we have suddenly returned from a long ocean voyage. All of a sudden, we realize we're here, here. While there is certainly great awakening, the great dropping away of everything, absolutely everything, even any observer. Our days are filled with these small multitudes, with these multitudes of small awakenings, when we just find ourselves returning to right now, returning to this present moment, letting go of our thoughts, dreams, and fantasies, as if we've constantly just arrived at the party. The past is memory. The past is in thought. And the future is imagined. That is to say, it's thought too. So only the present is where we can find what is not in thought. A flower, the reality of a flower, is not a thought or an idea. It's a flower. We, ourselves, are not a thought, a sensation, or a feeling. Our internal experience of ourselves, while it includes thoughts, sensations, and feelings, is not just that. When we get lost in our heads, even exalted dreams like the dream of enlightenment, we miss the very simple truths of our real life. As human beings, we have the capacity to dream, to envision. That's why we have civilization, art, writing, science. This is a skill which is unique to us, and it's wonderful. But we get confused when we don't recognize what's thought and what's real, and we make ourselves miserable and we suffer. We cause a lot of trouble with our ideas. We make up and believe plausible explanations about why bad, painful things have happened to us or those we love. We make up stories about other people which distort our relationships. And on a national level, we make war or we feel that we have to correct or civilize other peoples. At the very least, we imagine that we can somehow make things better for ourselves at the expense of others, not recognizing that others are ourselves. We are always searching for solid ground, something we can count on. Sometimes people who are practicing can get kind of skeptical and nihilistic and imagine that all thought is dangerous or delusory. But that's not true either. Some thoughts are more accurate at expressing reality. That's what trying to tell the truth is, the truth the best we can see it. One of the precepts is not to lie, but to speak the truth. But to really be truthful, we have to recognize that anything we say is still in thought, although it may be a true thought. The truth which is reality, the real truth of things, cannot be expressed completely, either in words or in thought. Actually, it can't be expressed at all. How do you really express the truth of a flower, of a human being? That's the challenge of this koan. So when this high official Rico says, "Heaven and earth and I are of the same root, all things and I are one," that's extraordinarily wonderful. Can you see how he's missing it? How he's caught up in this lovely dream? How he's missing his real life in the garden, the heat of the afternoon, the breeze, the faint scents, the colors, the thorns on the stems, the dying leaves on the ground, the sweat between his robe and his skin, the buzzing of insects, and even more, this vast life of not knowing, of no flowers, nothing that can be called Rico, of nothing, nothing, nothing at all. Now, Nansen, who's a very experienced teacher, had the challenge of being genuine, speaking truth, and trying to help Rico without offending this very powerful man. It's not safe to be a Zen teacher. And so he says, "People of the present day see this one flower as though they were in a dream. Even if it's a beautiful dream, it's still a dream, isn't it? And yet, you know, if we really wanted to be awake, wouldn't we be? If we really want to be here, right here, we are here. But actually, the truth is we love to dream. We love to live in fantasy. We're completely addicted. We're all major movie producers and directors. If we get bored, we slip into dreams to entertain ourselves. Some of us have nourished favorite fantasies or dream states since childhood, and we feed and grow them by our attention and our fidelity. When we're happy, we try to codify our experience so we can save it and replay it like a favorite DVD. And if we're sad or discounted or terrified or in any way dissatisfied, we keep revising our experience and our imagination until it meets our needs, our specifications, and our sense of how we like to see ourselves. Or we just escape far, far away. If we feel traumatized by events, we often relive them over and over again in an attempt to discharge the traumatic event from our system, or in some sense make sense of it. We sometimes repeat negative or positive fantasies over and over again because in some way we derive some comfort from them. And we like the idea that things make sense and have internal coherence, and we develop this coherence even if our experiences actually challenges this notion. We have a hard time telling reality from our ideas of reality, our picture of reality. Our attempts to explain reality, to somehow grasp it conceptually, date way back to very early civilization and probably earlier. In Plato's Allegory of the Cave, which is in the Republic, which I studied in my very first humanities course in college, we're likened to prisoners who are chained in a cave so that we can only see the reflections of what passes out of sight, reflected on the wall from a fire. Our heads are held still, immobilized, so we can't turn and look, and we soon become fascinated by who can name and explain the images, but all the time without the slightest idea that we're just looking at reflections. Plato points out that if a prisoner was released, he would at first be completely disoriented, unable to see in the bright sun without pain, and would not understand what he was now able to see as he looked around. We have no idea that our world as we know it is not real. In our time, a similar premise was explored in the movie The Truman Show with Jim Carrey. Truman grows up living a perfect life in a perfect world, but it's completely manufactured. He lives his life on a reality TV show, viewed by millions, and he's the only one who thinks it's real life. His wife, his best friend, the neighbors he waves to, are all actors and actresses. His life is entertainment for others, but of course to him, it's what's real. And then he starts to get this weird sense, the sense that all is not well, that it's too predictable, that it feels manufactured. It just doesn't smell right to him. And gradually, he starts to test his world, and the fabric of his life starts to tear until ultimately he makes a break for freedom, eventually literally tearing open the dome of the vast studio which has been his universe. In a sense, it's a paranoid fantasy, an allegory like Plato's allegory. But you know, many of us have had the experience of something which breaks into our dream world, often a traumatic event, maybe realizing that we're seriously ill, or that someone we love is seriously ill, or that they've died, or that someone we love no longer loves us. Maybe just really seeing the suffering in the world. All of a sudden, we feel that our reality, this delicate structure which we've built up and which we reinforce every day with our thoughts and our fantasies, is crumbling. It's no longer in balance, no longer stable. The truth is, it never really was stable, because everything, everyone changes. But we had developed a structure around it, and we kind of hoped it would hold. It's as if we had built up a beautiful castle among the rocks of an exposed mountain, made up of Q-tips and pine needles and little bits of tape. And then it rains and it gets windy, and everything collapses in a soggy heap. We then feel we just can't live anymore looking at these pitiful remnants, these shrouds, but we also can't see clearly. This is a very painful state, but a very necessary state. It feels like everything is coming apart. But painful as it is, an opening for truth is created. We find ourselves in the great doubt. We no longer know anything. We don't know. We really don't know. The wonderful thing is that it is at those times when there is nothing interfering, nothing in the way, that there is space, and that the reality that has been there all along has a chance to reveal itself to us. Everything is true. Everything is real. Everything is just as it is. But now we know it for ourselves. I don't actually know if letting go and just letting everything rest, letting everything be, helps us to wake up in any causal sense. But I do suspect that to stay awake, you can't keep holding on. Every minute we breathe, here, here. Even have to be okay with dreaming if that's where we find ourselves. Letting go and coming back. Moving freely without sticking to anything. No matter what state we find ourselves in, back to here, back to here. Now. Again and again. You know, time gets kind of weird because when we're awake, it's always now. It's always here. Only when everything is at rest, when we don't fight reality, when we don't fight things just as they are, do we really see a flower, smell the scent of pine, feel the sun. Only then is there peace. And what we realize is that from the beginning, everything has always been at peace. But the truth is, even the idea of being at peace is a dream. Rico says, "Heaven and earth and I are of the same root. All things and I are one." You know, it's totally true. It's totally wrong. How could there be heaven and earth? How could there be roots and flowers? How he destroys his life. Lost, lost. Pink, red, yellow, white. Thorns, perfume, warm sun, damp, dark, cool earth. William Blake wrote, "To see the world in a grain of sand and heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand and eternity in an hour." How can we see a flower? How can we really see a person if we're stuck in the world of dreams? When dreaming lets us go, then the truth reveals itself spontaneously. Because that's all there is, really. Everything disappears. The world blooms, and we're all flowers. Tiny ants, the shadows of clouds, the distant rumble of trucks on Federal. Bubblegum on the sidewalk, the doves that flap overhead and into the window. We're never alone, and there's nothing outside of us. What great affection Nansen has for this high official, who chatters on like a little child, maybe much like he had been many years ago. People of this present day see this one flower as though they were in a dream. In a dream. Mary Oliver wrote a poem about a summer day. It goes like this. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean. The one who has flung herself out of the grass. The one who's eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down. Who is gazing around with her enormous, complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your wild, precious life? Tell me, what will you do? The choice to live aware, to be awake, is one we make second by second, right now, over and over again, as long as we're alive, as long as we breathe. Letting go of our fantasies and dreams, our frantic doing, idle and blessed, even in the midst of activity, in the midst of effort. Just to be here in the garden, just here in the Zendo this morning. Infinity in the palms of our hands as they rest in our laps. Each minute an eternity. Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? What will you do with your one wild and precious life? Together with all beings, we attain Buddhahood.